7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 55 of Color of Magic, sponsored by CardSphere.com. I'm going to try just putting that in the opener there and see how that works for everybody. But if you haven't checked it out, check out CardSphere.com. They are super awesome supporting our stuff and giving a gig to my co-host, Brian Allen. How's it going?
Going pretty well. How about you?
I am doing great. I guess I left myself out of the intro, but I'm Daquan Watson. Everybody should know that by now. If you listen to our other episodes, it's the same voices that have been here for 54 other episodes. So, you know. But yeah, man, it's been a pretty interesting and wild week. I was sitting here for one point thinking we weren't going to have that much to talk about on this episode. And then it was like, almost felt like hour after hour while I was filling out the run sheet the last couple of days. It was like, oh, there's a thing. There's a thing. So we're going to have a few things to talk about for sure. I want to tell everybody about Patreon.com. You should come over there and help us out. If you want to support the show, you can hit us up at patreon.com/colorofmagic. And I want to say thank you to three new patrons this week. We have Kevin Myers, James Matthew, and Adam Wheel. Thank y'all so very much for supporting the show. It really helps us out, allows us to put some extra time in here. We no longer have to worry about paying the bills involved with the show, so that's awesome. And we get to put a little something in our pocket. So thanks a bunch. Now, I want to start this week by I have like a two-part rant for the soapbox.
Okay.
The first one, this is okay. For those of y'all that don't like sports ball, you can fast forward like 2 minutes. But I don't know if you saw the World Series the other day. And I don't even follow that much baseball. Baseball, like I will watch a big game here or there. And I understand all the rules and all that. Like, baseball is fine. But, like, for a whole season, can't do it. But the shortened season was way more entertaining. But anyway, you got a guy who's pitching a two-hit game with 9 strikeouts. And they pulled him. Okay, in a regular season game, I can almost understand it. Right? Where you're like, okay, we got to save this dude's arm. We're going to need him for 20 other games or whatever, fine. But this is for the World Series. He's not going to pitch again. So if the dude wants, if he's hot and he's just shoving balls across the plate, then you got to let him throw, right?
It's your job as a manager to know when you think that guy's done. And I can only assume they, at that point, felt, because it's one of the toughest jobs in baseball. Because if you wait too long, the ball goes 500 feet, you know. But yeah,
that's,
I'd
fair,
be more inclined to probably leave a guy out there. Give him a chance, you know. It's his game to win or lose at that point, I would think.
Yeah, I just don't understand. Like, I mean, the other team hadn't scored on you yet. I mean, he didn't get himself into dangerous spots or anything. And then it kind of backfired on him. So I'm like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's one of those weird things, man. I don't get it. All right. So this other thing, and this came up because there was a discussion about Commander Legends. And we'll talk about that a little bit more later in the show. But specifically, R&D spends a lot of time worrying about limited play or draft play on a lot of these collector or special sets. When we're talking about master sets or Modern Horizons, that type of stuff, right? We want the products to still be good that you can draft with them. But the reality, whether people want to admit this or not, I do understand there is a part of the community that enjoys drafting. Like, if I'm sitting around with friends, I enjoy drafting. I get it. It's a way to play Magic. But the majority of the Magic community does not draft. And even less so the special sets, because they're so high, right? And yes, yeah, like, well, if you pay, you're going to buy boosters and you pay the money to draft and the extra money might win you packs. But the average person doesn't think they're going to win packs, and they're not, because they're not good at drafting. Yeah, but they end up spending an extra $5 to $10 per draft, which for them could be, or well, more than that if you're talking about like one of the high-end master sets or something, where they could have just bought another booster or two at the end of the whole thing. So they just don't draft. And less so because, again, as you get to the special sets, the prices are higher per booster. So it's just not a thing they do. And for whatever reason, people don't understand that. And I tell people, like, I've seen this as a retailer. I've seen it being in a group with a bunch of other retailers talk about it. I've been at Wizards and seen data. And even recently, I asked on one of my streams when we had like 80 people in there. And I said, okay, how many of you draft standard legal sets? And then how many of you, or more than three times, I said. Because I assumed even if you draft, a lot of them aren't going to afford to be able to do it more than once or twice in a lot of cases. And I said, how many of you draft the set or the special sets more than three times? Not only did most of them say no to both questions, some said, well, yes, right now, because I'm just trying to manage gold or whatever in arena. So that's the only way some of them draft. And then some said they just don't draft at all. You know, so they're not even, it's not even up to three times. They're just saying, I just don't draft. And that was my point. And then here was the kicker for me in this discussion, because I literally was like, hey, I have these resources. This is why I understand this to be true. The dude was like, well, you have your data and I have mine.
There you go.
And I'm like, what the hell are you basing yours on? I've literally been behind on the other side of the wall and seen numbers. I have talked to other people that do this daily and run events. What the hell? Like, I literally was on the team. I was the person who put the reports together that showed how much people played each format every week.
Fake literally, news. Sir. Fake news.
I literally had access to the actual files in a Tableau report every week. Hell, every day if I wanted to look at it. And then I have somebody go like, oh, well, you have your data and I have mine. Like, what the? If I wasn't trying to be professional, I would have drugged that Twitter thread out. That's all I'm saying. Like, I don't.
That's part of our problem. You know, the saying used to be, you're entitled to your own opinion, but not your own facts. People feel they're entitled to their own facts now in today's world, apparently.
All I can say is, like, the only thing that's left is a thing I can't show him for legal reasons.
Yeah.
That's literally it. But I'm like, dude, I get no benefit from making the statement. Whether people draft or not is meaningless to me. Like, I don't make any more or less money because people are drafting. Like, my thing is, though, if the players are going to be happier, then let's put fewer junky cards in sets that people aren't going to draft. Now, even when I polled people, more people said they draft the regular standard sets than the special sets. Yeah. So I'm fine saying, hey, the four standard releases a year, let's go ahead and make sure those are still draftable. And we put the proper cards and all the right rarities or whatever to make it work. But when you have something that's like a master set or some type of reprint set, or even coming up like Commander Legends or whatever, people are buying those specifically to play with them. They want to go crack boosters, find cool cards for the decks they play, or something to build around or whatever. Like, that's what they want. They're not opening them to draft. They're just not. And I don't know what else to tell people, because I'm literally like years of this. When I said doing it myself, running events, running a store, other people that run events and run stores, same thing. And then, like I said, being at Wizards for a couple of years and literally seeing the numbers. I don't know.
Do you think there's anything they could do to fix that? Or is that just, you know, that's ingrained and people probably just aren't going to draft that much?
I don't think so. I think it's just one of those things that the average player is not inclined to do that. Like, one of the statements, and this was unsolicited, one of the people in my chat even said, I still remember the first time I went into a store and somebody tried to explain the draft to me. And all I thought was, why? And that's the reaction a lot of the casual players have, is like, they're like, oh, so we can open packs and then pass packs around and then like take different cards and build a deck. But like, why wouldn't I just buy packs and build a deck? Like, why do I put all this time into my favorite commander or collecting all the blue cards or whatever to just get an opportunity where I may not get to play the cool things I like to play? Like, that's just not how a casual player thinks.
That's absolutely my stance. So that's my vote.
Well, there you go. And I think people fail to realize the average player plays Kitchen Table Magic. right? They're sitting around with their friends, their cousins, their after school group, whatever. And they don't have a full draft group a lot of the time. Like it's two or three people maybe at any given point. And that's how they play. Unless they go down to a local store. But even then, they're showing up with a standard deck or a commander deck or something that they've already put together that they want to play with somebody. And again, I'm not saying this to say
it's a skill and it's not a skill that everybody has.
Very true. And I'm not saying this to say that draft is bad. I think when I've made these type of statements in the past, people thought, oh, you're just hating on draft, or why should draft not, or limited fans not get support or whatever. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm, like I said, I'm still saying, yes, feel free to make the standard legal sets draftable. But if I'm buying a premium priced reprint set, I don't want the junky cards. The other casual kitchen table players don't want the junky cards. Your commander players don't want the junky cards because those have literal zero value in a booster that somebody is spending real money on. Like, you know, we go spend $3 or $4 on a regular booster. It's still not nothing, but it's like, yeah, okay. But when we start talking about $9 and $12 boosters, I was like, okay, now we're getting into real money. Why do we want to open cards we're never going to play? Because we had to reprint some junky 2-mana common just so people who draft the set can get, I don't know, the right card to fill out some sub theme in the set, right? Nobody wants that. Like, even when I do box openings on my channel, like, I just basically skip right through those and go straight to the uncommons or whatever, because nobody on the chat cares at all. Nobody wants to see those. So yes, still support them, but I think like anything, your support for a thing has to be proportionate to what your goals are and be proportionate to the number of part of your community, I guess, that is involved in that activity. And that's a lot of time and effort that's going into designing a set, deciding the cards that go in or out, you know, the mechanics or whatever, to ultimately have stuff nobody's going to use. For me, that goes all the way back to like cons and the Outlast mechanic. Absolutely terrible for constructed play. Probably one of the worst constructed playable or playability mechanics that have existed. But people always come back to like, oh, but it was great and limited. I was like, yeah, but what does that do for 80%, 90% of the players? Nothing. Literally nothing. We all have a bunch of junky cards and a couple of rares even that had the mechanic that pretty much do nothing for anybody. We need to avoid that.
There you go. You heard it here first. Outlast needs to make a comeback.
Man, don't even start. Like, so yeah, there you go. That's a good rant for the day. There we go. That's what happens sometimes. Somebody on Twitter fires off a dumb thing like that. And I'm like, you know what? At least I have a place I can get some catharsis and talk about it. But all right, Brian, why don't we tell everybody, what did you learn last week?
Well, kind of just before we went on, we lost another pro wrestler from our childhood, the wild-eyed Southern. Yeah. The wild-eyed Southern boy, Tracy Smothers. He's probably more known, I think, for his work in like Smoky Mountain Wrestling, WCW, and definitely not a household name, but he's somebody that worked with and trained a lot of household names like Edge, CM Punk, and sounds like a guy that really just, this is rare in wrestling, as you know, Daquan, that nobody is saying a bad word about him. And Taz says, you know, there are very few people in this business that everybody likes, and it sounds like Tracy Smothers is one of those guys.
Man, that's rough, you know. And it's sad, too, because I think we're just getting to that age where just a lot of the people grew up with, you know, they're clocking 70, 80, like a lot of them are, you know, they're just getting older. So you're going to have a lot of those childhood idols or whatever, or childhood heroes, just kind of start going away. That's always sad. Whatever you're into, you know, it's always sad to see that happen.
And he had one of the great gimmicks in ECW. He joined the full-blooded Italian stable. Like, wait, you're Tracy Smothers. You're not I'm from Nashville, Italy, son. And he was pretty funny, from Nashville, Italy.
That's pretty funny. You got to admit, that is a good gimmick.
It really is.
Oh, man. I love it. I love it. My thing is,
he would drop that from Nashville, Italy.
Dude, you know what, though? That's like when they used to announce Undertaker from Death Valley. And it's like, come on. But you got to play the gimmick, though. It's all you got. Yep. You got to sell it for the people.
And of course, the best one when people were from Parts Unknown.
Parts Unknown always sounded lazy, though. It was always like some jobber or whatever, or the guy who got like a new gimmick and they didn't know how long it was going to last. I was like, man, I would assume if you were a wrestler, you knew.
Well, yeah. We got the internet now. Everybody knows where everybody is from.
I'm just thinking, though, if you were backstage and they said, okay, we're going to announce you as Parts Unknown. Like, you already knew, man, y'all ain't got nothing planned for me.
I want to say the Warrior was from Parts Unknown back when he was the Dingo Warrior, I think.
Yeah, initially, but then he caught on.
If you're the Dingo Warrior, shouldn't you be from Australia? Because nobody else has dingoes, right?
That would be the assumption.
That's how much research they did, you know, and create some of these characters.
True. So the thing, I can't even say this necessarily a thing I learned as much as I just appreciated last week, was one of our listeners, I believe his name is Jeff Stumpo. He felt pretty bad that, you know, we had the situation last week with everybody making those distasteful alters. So he took the time to do a fun alter with Nyambi having some wings and flying. And I thought that was really cool. So I shared it with our Patreon backers in the Discord. So if you haven't seen it and you are a backer, check out our Discord. I posted the picture over there for everybody. So nothing big there. Just something I want to say thank you. And it was just a nice gesture.
That is awesome.
Over the weekend, we had the MPL and Rivals split is what they call those weekends now, or I guess the same thing they call it, but now they have a little more weight. And I will say that I think, first off, overall, I think the production was pretty good. There was, you know, normal technical difficulties here or there, but that's fine. But I think the structure of the event worked, where everybody had their schedule. They're doing it round robin style, so you're not playing, because the problem with the old split was you were kind of broken into pools, and then you played everybody from your pool like multiple times over the season or whatever, and it was just kind of weird. Whereas here, everybody in the MPL, everybody in the Rivals, you'll play everybody else in your division or whatever. You play everybody else in the Rivals, you play everybody else in MPL. That's the way I understand it. So the first thing is everybody gets a set schedule. So they were able to post their schedule on their social media stuff and people could talk about it and see what matches were coming up. I think I saw a couple where one player was even like, oh, man, I'm looking forward to playing you on Saturday or whatever. You know, so a lot of that was kind of fun. And you get to hype up stuff where best friends got paired up and stuff like that. Right. That was pretty entertaining.
That's always fun. That,
yeah, it gave a little more, I don't know, like importance, a little more background, a little more depth to the matchups. I also appreciated that the arena, I guess it was the arena or the esports social account, was kind of doing updates to the importance of the matches. Like, hey, this weekend they're playing this many matches. Here's why. Like, the points are good for this thing at the end of the year. Boom. And then these people that score this many points will be, you know, it's still in the league and the others will get relegated or whatever. Right. So now they're starting to detail out that picture without people having to go find all the details and read through all the flow charts or whatever. And that's a very smart move. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a very smart move. So good on their part. So that was all excellent. You know, I think this does a good job to some level of filling in our, what we kind of got used to was weekly or biweekly GP coverage, you know, because there's no Grand Prix right now. So getting to see top level people play every round was great. And actually talking with Brian David Marshall this past week, and one of the things he talked about that was difficult sometimes with Grand Prix is those early rounds, you still want to show coverage. But do you find like a known player or a good player, and then he happens to randomly be paired up with some lower skill player who's at their first Grand Prix? Like, nobody wants to watch that, you know. Or worse, you get somebody who's not comfortable being in front of a camera or something or whatever, and then that's a weird experience. Like, I've actually had that happen where I think it's still online somewhere, where I was in a Star City Open, and it's like second to the last round or something, maybe the last round, playing for top 16 or something. And I get an opponent who he's never been on camera. And, I'm trying to be relaxed and joke around because we have a small crowd watching or whatever. And I realize, like, me being funny and fun is just making this dude more nervous. So at some point, I just back off and I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to be chill, try to help this dude out, whatever, because this obviously is not fun for him. You know what I mean? Like, and afterwards he said he was fine. He just, you know, first time he's had a crowd watching him play or whatever. But it when you get those type of people on camera, it's just not as good, because they're not going to play well and they're real fidgety and it's just kind of weird. So I get it. All right, so you try to avoid that, and you don't have that with this new setup, and I think it's great. Yeah, I love the way they were doing it, and I will say this even. I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like this was the first time I felt like the commentary team, the announcers, were able to let their hair down a little bit. Not like they went crazy or anything, but I felt like it didn't feel as stiff for the normal Magic promotions, which I thought was really nice. There's only one glaring thing that I think they missed on for me. Was toward the end, they had a match that with Brad Nelson and Brian Brown Duin, who, for those of you who don't know, they're roommates, and they've been friends forever. They also have a podcast. But their third member, who is Brad's brother, Corey, who I love doing commentary with, they didn't have Corey doing commentary during that match. I'm like, how do you have a guy who's a brother and roommate of these people, or ex-roommate of these people, and they do a podcast together every week, and you don't have them, like, how is he not doing commentary? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's such an easy underlying story. And he could have made all kinds of jokes and been in the clean because he's got a good relationship with both of the guys. It's like such an easy missed opportunity that I'm like, man, we got to be better. We got to capture those moments because that's what makes good coverage. Now, I will say, Brad made an amazing save on that anyway, because he got to the end, has zero outs, and you see him writing on a piece of paper, and he ends up holding it up to the camera that says, I don't think I have outs, but I might have an idea. And you see him just rub his hands together, and then he just disappears off camera. And you're like, what's he doing? And then I had the realization of, oh, is he really going to do what I think he's going to do? And then he showed, because like Brian doesn't know. He's sitting there with like his headphones on or whatever, waiting for Brad to take an action. Brad shows up in Brian's camera and like is clicking on the screen to try to get him to click on concede or whatever, which I thought was great because, you know, they're still living in the same house. But okay. No, I mean, yeah, that was a lot of fun. So just having those types of moments, I think, are very good. So, I mean, I think we're starting to see.
If you don't do them now, if you don't do things like that now, you're going to miss the opportunity, because at some point we'll be back to playing live events someday.
Yeah. And I think this is all a culmination of Wizards learning a lot of things, not just Wizards, but also the production studio studios that they work with, also learning things. You know, for as much as people wanted to gripe about things, I had to explain to people that doing all digital coverage is completely different for Wizards. Like, it has different needs, it has different wants, your pacing's different, the technology behind it's different, it's just not the same. And they were just getting to where they were getting better and mastering the paper coverage, right? So this has been like a crash course in learning for them. And the pandemic kind of sped that up because everything's been online. So not only had they gotten the benefit of that, but they've also gotten to learn from all these other events that are happening online regularly now. You know, you're finding different people you can use for broadcasts. You're finding different things that people like as far as interacting with chat or not. Right. And it's starting to manifest itself a little bit. You know, I obviously things to work on. I'm not saying they were perfect. I'm just saying it's a long way from last year where we were with the NPL and rival stuff. So I don't know, Brian. One thing I would ask you is there a particular thing you would like to see implemented in coverage that isn't right now?
I mean, like you said, it would have been great, you know, to do kind of a event specific switch in a situation like that. That would with the roommates. I remember seeing one during the summer where I think a husband and wife ended up playing each other. That was also really fun. And I don't think we're going to end up seeing a lot of things that we're going to end up keeping. I don't know necessarily what all of them are going to be, but we're seeing that just everybody that's doing coverage right now in all genres is looking, seeing things that, hey, this actually is entertaining or funny or just interesting.
Yeah. I mean, necessity is the mother of invention, as they say. So let's go ahead and touch on Commander Legends a little bit here. I don't think we're really going to jump into previews too much, mostly because there's still a ton of cards to come. I think we still have a full week's worth of previews, even by the time people are listening to this episode. So we're going to let that kind of simmer a little bit. But the thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, kind of, okay, I touched on this a little bit on the soapbox segment, but this set was designed with the idea that people are going to draft Commander Legends. You know, they made rules for you to get however many packs it is and build a commander deck that you can play with Commander Legends, which don't know if it was necessary. Again, I think it was, as much as I genuinely do love some of the people I worked with at Wizards, I do really appreciate the work that a lot of them do, and I'm still friends with several of them, but this was a waste of time. It just was. Like, there's no need. Nobody needs to draft this set. This set was not going to, like, even if you were concerned that, well, at least if we make it draftable, the people who wouldn't normally buy boosters would buy boosters. Like, no, people play the, man, I'm like, people play the crap out of Commander.
Yeah.
They were going to buy a lot of these boosters. Like, this was going to sell. Like, from the minute you said there is a Commander-specific booster with a bunch of stuff for Commander players, it was already sold out effectively, at least on the first print run, probably even the first two. So there's no reason at all to even worry about that mechanic. Now, conveniently or inconveniently, I guess, COVID happened. So a lot of people aren't really going to draft it anyway,
yeah.
Which is kind of weird because they're still running the ads of just like, hey, we can just draft Commander Legends or whatever. It's like, but why are we still promoting that, right? Like, we knew 3 months ago that we weren't going to be in the clear for people to go out and draft. So why are we still running those ads?
Because they had time to pick them. Pretty much they got them in the can. They're going to use them.
But even then, like, those probably weren't finished before even 8 weeks ago. So there was time to pivot. It's not like the production's that deep on those. I mean, it's just a weird thing. Just a weird thing. But I will say this for people. If you haven't, go check out spelltable.com and set up an account. If you don't have something like a quality cell phone or a cheap webcam, invest in one. Because the set looks great. I think people are excited about it. There's a lot of cool cards. And the only way to play for a lot of people right now is going to be on Spell Table. And I have to say, from using it, it's pretty nice. It tracks your life totals. You can track commander damage. It does all this stuff. So if you want to play commander, or if you just want to play one-on-one paper magic, or, you know, two-headed giant or whatever it is, go for it. I think it's a great program. It's a great website. I hadn't used it up until, you know, a couple months ago when I did that Commander Online thing. And I was surprised how easy it was. I literally set up my account, did like a courtesy look at the UI, only really used it for the first time that day, and I had no trouble. Like, it all makes exact sense. It works the way you think it would. It's great. And I think that's going to be people's kind of solution for the short term. while we can't get together and play Commander or not, especially after you buy Commander Legends, because you're going to want to use the stuff, right? You're going to build out your decks. You're going to upgrade your decks you already have, and you're going to want to see if the stuff works the way you want, and that's going to be the way to do it. So save yourself the trouble. Go over, make an account, and get ready to play. And Brian, have you played online or played digital? I mean, I guess you've played digital, played Arena, but have you played Paper Magic online yet?
I have not. I need to check out Spell Table because I've heard nothing but good things. I mean, Wizards bought them, so they must be doing pretty well.
Yeah, it's really surprising to me, honestly. It's one of the few times, because normally, you know how it is, myself included, like we're gamer nerds. If you find something you like, you're going to overhype it a little bit, right? But this is one where, you know, a couple people told me about it, and I'm like, okay, I'll go check it out since this is what we're using for the event. And after like 5 minutes, I was kind of like, man, this thing actually really is good. Like this is, it's like MTG Melee, right? That and Spell Table are probably my two sites of the year where I looked at them and went, whoever designed this obviously understands the use and plays the games that are attached to this use. Because there was things that I went, okay, I know exactly why this is here. I know who would be looking for this. I see what the use is for it. Like literally every, even if I didn't care about the thing, I understood totally why every part was there. Yeah, that's the thing. When we get to talking about new technologies and new websites and whatever, this is what we need. Stuff being made by the people who understand what the actual needs are. Not somebody who's just being contracted to make a thing and saying, okay, cool, well, let me submit a bid and then here's some wireframes and let me build this out. And then you get 3/4 of the way through and you're like, yeah, this is pretty good, but anyway, you could change these 15 things. You know, just people understand from A to Z everything that needs to be built for it. And the other thing about Spell Table I'll say is it's very simple. It's pretty, I mean, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, in a very good way. I think sometimes people assume, and this happens a lot in board game development, that if something is simple, it's a worse designed game or it's not a real product. It's you know, somebody didn't put real time and development into it. But I argue a lot of times that doing simple well is way more difficult than doing complicated well. So I think they got it right. But if you want to play Commander Legends, I think that's the way we're going to be playing it for probably at least till midsummer next year, I think.
Yeah.
And that's a while away. That's a little bit optimistic.
Just a few minutes ago saying it's going to be at least, you know, all 2021, possibly into 2022 before we get back to a semblance of normalcy.
Yeah, I totally believe it. Doesn't surprise me one bit.
Because the thing is, okay, even if we get a vaccine, we know everybody, and you're breaking up, sounds like, or I'm breaking up. Something's breaking up.
I think it was you.
Okay.
But you're there now.
Even once we get a vaccine, everybody is, we know how the things are. Everybody's not immediately going to go take the vaccine. There's people that don't believe vaccines are a thing. There's people that think they cause all kinds of horrible diseases. So just the vaccine isn't going to get us home.
Yeah. I think in the short term, we still need to just find ways to keep playing and stay active and stay connected to our communities as best we can. I know here's an interesting thing here, too. People assume that no one's going to buy Paper Magic because we can't go play at stores and whatever, right? There's a couple of parts to that. The first is people are still going to want these cards eventually, especially for Commander Legends, right? I can almost understand that if you're talking about a standard legal booster, but for something like Commander Legends, people are always going to want those cards at some point down the road because a lot of these aren't going to even get reprinted anytime soon, right? This is the only place they're going to be for a few years, probably. So there's still value here. So people are buying them for that reason alone. I've also seen pictures from some places where they don't care as much about the social distancing and being in a business or not right now. So some places are just going to be buying it and playing. So, you know, whether we like it or not, that's a thing too.
Lord help us.
Yeah. But I say that to say something that kind of, it's just kind of like invest at your own risk. But there is part of me, that feels like cards that are printed between Throne of Eldraine and probably, like I said, whatever comes out next summer. So I guess that'd be the D&D set, might have more long-term value. Because, you know, because of shipping issues and logistics and all that, Wizards is selling, for the most part, it sounds like they're selling out of things that are getting at least printed and shipped or whatever, and retailers are needing more things, so that's good. But the total number of packs and boosters out there is probably going to be less because you don't have stuff being given away as prizes at FNMs. Yeah. You don't have people playing side events at Grand Prix. You don't have people getting stuff off the prize wall. You know, all that. Like, boosters go out a bunch of different ways throughout a year, throughout a season, and those aren't happening. So I would guess, and I don't know exact numbers, obviously, because I don't know, I can't tell you exactly how many boosters get handed out at a Grand Prix or, you know, what each store goes through for an FNM, because those are all different. But it stands to reason that these sets at a minimum would have, if I was just guessing, 20% to 30% less circulation than previous sets, potentially. So there's potential long-term value there, especially if you have a card that's a couple of cards that are good in Commander and there's just less of them in existence. You know, that's something to think about. That's all I'm saying.
And also, because Throne of Eldraine started our stretch where Magic cards were just broken AF.
Well, yeah, that's true. Just the whole set of Throne of Eldraine is kind of absurd anyway. But again, you know, Throne of Eldraine came out just before we started talking about all this, you know, isolation pandemic stuff. So even that's not going to have as big of a circulation as it would normally have, I wouldn't think. I mean, a lot of that was already printed and out there and exist. But I still think, again, a lot of it's not going out as prizes and some of the other miscellaneous ways that we distribute boosters. So, I mean, granted, there's probably going to be like more Eldraine than, say, I don't know, what, you know, the core set or anything else that came out since then, you know, but even Zendikar. But it's going to be less than the stuff that came out probably in the previous year, I would think. It's a good conversation to have. I don't know, maybe I can follow up at some point and see if I can dig up some kind of numbers to give it more context. But I think it's a good thought exercise if you're thinking about, well, should I buy a box of Commander Legends or not? I'm going to buy one. And I don't even play nearly as much Commander as everybody else that's probably way into the set. So there you go. Another thing I want to touch on. There was a little bit of, I don't know what the best way is to describe it. I don't know, rabble-rousing. For those who don't know, Wizards of the Coast has decided over the last couple months to give some qualifier entries to the Zendikar, I think it's just called the Zendikar Weekend Qualifier, whatever, coming up, to winners of some of these tournaments that are happening. You know, they had some, I believe, for the, like, the online convention tournaments, I think, qualified some people. I want to say the VML that we talked about recently, that the winner of that, or maybe the top couple of spots, gets invites. And there have been a few people bothered by this. And I feel like we're just running back the same argument we had like a year ago, or maybe 2 years ago. But the reality is, these events that are getting the invites have skilled players. Like, the people winning these events and finishing in the top four of these events are still solid Magic players. They sometimes, though, are just playing in events where they feel more comfortable, where they feel the commentators treat them properly during their matches, where they feel their competitors are people they could joke around with and have fun banter back and forth on social media leading up to the matches or whatever. And maybe for them, it's their first real chance to say, okay, I feel comfortable here. Let me see if I can compete at the level I think I can. And if they earn the invite, F it. They earned it. And you know what? If you think they don't deserve it, then fine. Maybe they get to the main stage and just lose then. But they've earned the right regardless, and they get to play in this event. And there's and we've talked about this before on the show, right? Representation matters. And getting people from more groups, from more different parts of the gaming community, from different, you know, when you're talking about different genders or races or whatever, to participate in your top level events, it matters. It absolutely matters. So I have no...
I mean, even if they do have, you know, a bad first tournament, it's not like, you know, we haven't seen established pros have a bad tournament or a bad day or a bad game. We're like, oh, that's, you know, not what I would have expected from them. Everybody has an off day sometimes.
That's a very good point. You know, and I stand here saying this, like, if there's, you know, like the VML, you have to be non-male to play in that event. I ain't complaining about it. Great. I am glad that we're going to have some of them participating in this big event weekend or whatever. Like, why? What do you even get out of being mad about that? Like, because here's the reality. If that event doesn't happen or Wizards doesn't put that invite there, that invite's not magically going to show up somewhere else. It's not like you get a shot at an additional invite because they took one away from that event. That's just an added invite they gave to that event. So if they take it away, it doesn't mean you would get it. It's not something being taken away from you. It's additional. So there's no point in even arguing over it. You were never going to have a shot at that extra invite.
Because it's always the people. It's never, you know, the established pros that are making these arguments. It's generally somebody that you've never heard of before complaining about these invites.
Oh, let's be honest. Most of the time, it's just some bum.
Well, yeah, to put it in its strictest context, yes.
It's true, though. It's usually somebody who isn't that good anyway, or they're a tryhard that was not going to get there, or they would make it to the main stage and get blown out worse anyway. Like, just be real about it. Like, we talked about this pre-show, that people are just hard at gauging their own skill level or talent anyway. Like, the average humans are not good at it. And we know that, right? There's no way around that. Like, so I get how people think that they would be better, but they're just not. And the reality is, we all earn more. We all get more opportunities. We all get more things if more people engage with the game of Magic. That's really what this whole thing comes back to. It's more money for Wizards. It's more opportunities for things to be produced. There's more companies that will participate and run events. There's more prizes. There's more sponsors. The larger your pool of participants is. Like, there's no way around that. Like, that's just business logic. So if putting all these people in from all these different walks of life or different parts or subcultures or whatever of the Magic community or the gaming community even gets them involved in Magic and in Arena or whatever, and it brings more eyeballs, great. I am in favor of this thing. You're going to have a hard time changing my mind on that. Feel free to step into my DMs and we can have a discussion. But man, I don't know what you're going to bring that's going to change my mind. With that out of the way, Brian, let's talk about some game delays. Yeah, there was quite a few this week. And I feel you're going to be a little more in touch with this. Because, matter of fact, you pointed out one to me that I didn't even know was a thing. The two I had my eyes on this week were these Cyberpunk 2077 and the Magic the Gathering Arena mobile client. Both being delayed. Now, my quick takes are that, one, if something's going to get canceled right now or get pushed back or whatever, it should be a mobile client. There's still a large percentage of the community that's stuck at home. We're not going out doing anything. We're not taking a bunch of train rides and plane flights and whatever. So there's less use for an Arena mobile client right now. So if that gets pushed back to, I don't know, March, fine. Not a big deal. We're all going to survive. Would we like it? Yes. But whatever. It'll be here when it gets here. Cyberpunk 2077, I just look at that and say, like, man, video games get pushed back all the time. Like, for people to be losing their damn minds over this, I don't even understand. Like, I literally, on social media, about 2 hours before we started recording, I saw a lady, and I'm assuming she works at the company. She was sharing some messages she got. Literal death threats of, like, if you don't release this game, I'm gonna kill you. You're like, if this game doesn't come out, your family's done. or whatever. I'm like, what the, who, what kind of, like, man, I, like, what is wrong with people? Like, I don't know if you've been seeing any of this or not, but I just thought that was just crazy.
Yeah, and it's mind-boggling because, I mean, this is, you know, this is their big game for the year. This is, you know, obviously new consoles are about to launch. They're not pushing it back because it's ready and they want to make more money. If they're pushing it back a couple of months, there are some fundamental problems they got to fix. This is their job. They want the game to come out more than you do, believe it or not.
Yeah, I think people forget sometimes. Like, these companies, usually by the time you see a game, they've already invested sometimes 3 or 4 years in design, you know, programming, storyboards, voice actors, you know, all this different. They're literally millions of dollars in before it even gets this first thing sold. You know, and some of the stuff they've already paid for. They're already in the hole waiting to sell some copies of the game.
Yeah. They want it to come out worse than anybody. They're pushing it back for reasons.
But what the hell happens in your life for a game to cause you to threaten someone else's life? Like, the game, like, if the game doesn't come out, fine. Just play something else.
And we've also learned, you know, about the nightmares of crunch time and people being forced to work, you know, 70 and 80 hour work weeks to get there. I'd rather you wait. If you can treat your employees better, I'm happy to wait another couple of months or 6 or 7 months to get this game.
Well, yeah, but let's be real here. Like, the knuckle draggers have a problem because if their game comes out tomorrow and it has glitches or bugs or whatever, and there's 2 or 3 pieces of DLC they have to download, they're going to be bitching about that, right? Like, how'd you release a game if it's not complete? How do you release a game with all these problems and bugs, blah, blah, blah. But then you push it back 6 months and you're threatening somebody's family because the game didn't come out when you were ready for it. Like, there's no chill. Like, you got to have some kind of, like, level of reason in the middle of there. Come on. Like, and it's not like anybody has, like, you don't have money invested in these things. Like, you have, there's no tournament circuits. There's not, you literally have no reason to be that heavily invested in the release date of a damn game. You just don't. If you don't work for them.
People like Daquan and I, you know, do have a bit invested because we stream games. Yeah, it's disappointing. I won't get to stream it when I thought it was. But if it's literally our job and we can suck it up, then you got no excuse.
For sure. For sure. So, yeah, that's just one of those things I just wanted to touch on. But since you mentioned streaming, I have started streaming on YouTube a little bit more. So that's been kind of an interesting ordeal to learn how those are different between YouTube and Twitch. But from the last couple of weeks, we did talk about the YouTube revenue issues that are going on. Well, somehow, a bunch of people don't keep track of their money bags too well.
Oh, boy.
Because in the past couple of days, after, I guess, people finally got paid in their from their YouTube accounts or Google accounts, people went, huh, my pay is, like, depending on who you are, I guess, between like 10 and 20% less than I thought it was going to be. Well, that seems weird. And then they went and looked and saw all the problems I've been talking about for 2 weeks. I don't know how the hell, like, how many of y'all go clock in at work and you already know roughly how many hours you worked that week, whether you clocked in late a couple times or early a couple times or whatever. So, like, when your check gets there, you know about how much your check should be. I don't know how people don't know this when they're producing social content, but they don't. I guess, again, people just being bad at business. But anyway, people, it looks like a big part of the creator community just recently discovered this in the last, far as I can tell, 5 or 6 days when it started to become a big deal for a lot of people and people are posting videos. So now there's a hashtag going around that started today. Today or yesterday, maybe yesterday. YouTube wage theft is the hashtag. So you're probably going to see that popping up a little bit. At this point, my assumptions, and this is me just connecting a bunch of stories together from different people, different reports, looking at kind of when the items happened or not. It looks like YouTube is launching two recent things. If you produce any videos on YouTube, you're going to see that now you can also tag your videos with different types of content, right? Whether it has, like, questionable language or, I don't know, violence or whatever thing, right? You can tag your videos yourself. And then their AI is set to check it against its things that it sees versus what you said. And then I guess the more accurate you are, the quicker your videos become approved for monetization and stuff like that in the future, right? Makes sense. So that's something that got implemented. I also saw, I got an email that they have made some recent improvements to Google Analytics and some other stuff as well. My guess is somewhere along the way, while this stuff was being tested, implemented, turned on, or whatever, some piece of technology had a problem, whether it's an employee fat fingered a thing or somebody put in the wrong algorithm, or I don't know, it was set to search for a thing and then it mistagged a bunch of things or whatever, right? There was a technical problem on their side. Again, the details work out to where it's so system-wide, it's got to be something of that nature. Now, my guess is they're probably trying to fix it behind the scenes, and the best you're going to get is just like, hey, we had a problem, here's some money, great, you know, and that's it. You're probably not going to get a good explanation. They're not going to come, because really what YouTube should do at this point is just come out and say, hey, here's what we identified as the problem. It's really complicated. We're going to need another 30 days. We'll make sure everybody gets properly compensated for that time. And that's it. Because at the end, there's nothing else you can do. If it's a technical issue, it's got to be fixed. It's got to be fixed, right? As long as they're doing their job to fix it, cool. The problem is when you're not giving everybody a straight story and then you have a bunch of people panicking. That's way worse. So it'd be interesting to see what happens, especially now that you got this hashtag going and now you have a lot of people who don't produce content that, you know, people just want to be mad at corporate. So they're like, of course, YouTube treats all their creators like this. So I don't know how you're spread, you know, that whole thing starting. So whatever. But fact of the matter is people are missing some money, or the money's less than they anticipated it was going to be. So it'll be interesting. Keep your eyes out. I think it's just a good sub conversation in the creator and gaming culture right now.
Listen to the Color Magic podcast if you want to know, you know, when YouTube is glitching up. Watch your bag.
Yeah, for real, man. I don't know. I'm one of those people that when I'm involved in something, I just go deep and I learn too much about too many things sometimes. Okay, so another quick thing I want to point out, and this is the only part of the show this week that I actually feel conflicted about. So first off, the Red Bull Untapped 2020 World Finals starts, I believe, on the 1st, which I think is Sunday this week. This is tough because I want to both praise and complain about this thing. And this is why I feel conflicted. So hear me out. The first thing is that this has been a very cool set of qualifiers. It ran over a long stretch, so people had plenty of time throughout the year to qualify. They even did their like final week of wings last week that gave people like a almost like a week full of events. So you had your last chance qualifiers to get in, which was very cool. I thought that was awesome. They promoted the events well. The streams were pretty good for all of them. So like those all cool things. Now, I did see some people talk about Red Bull pulled some kind of like some shady activity the last couple nights. Apparently they popped into some people's streams and gifted a bunch of subs, I guess, to like get a shout out to promote the stuff for this weekend, which, you know, cool. You popped in, you at least gave some money to the streamers. You're kind of hopping in and interrupting their chat. But like, that's a little bit bush league though. You could have just contacted the streamer and been like, hey, can I just pay you like $20 or $50 or whatever, just to mention the event for Saturday. Right. You could have done something like that. But I don't know. It's not bad, honestly. That's minor compared to one of the other big complaints I have. The commentary team, I will say, is very cool. It's 23 different people they got for commentary. This is a gigantic commentary team. But they went and got like actual, you know, well-known community members. They got great personalities. They've got top MPL players. They have Rivals League members. I think when I did a count, they have 6 that are non-males, which is also cool. So more than 25% of your group of commentators are non-males. So that great start. But then comes my real complaint. That you had 23 shots at it. And as far as I can tell, there's not one black person on that panel. And if there is one, there would be exactly one that maybe I didn't recognize or something. But I saw none.
You want women and black people? What's wrong with you? How much diversity can they stand, sir?
Yeah, right. Okay, now here's the thing. I will say, it's a little bit of a bad look for them because the Red Bull owner has had some, we'll say, political issues supporting some of the borderline alt-right stuff a little bit. Feel free to go look it up. I'm not going to rehash it here on the episode, but there is stuff out there. Feel free to go read it. You're probably going to have to use Google Translate because some of the stuff is in, I believe, German or whatever, because they're a European based company. But I don't think the owner made this decision. I don't think it's a, like, they obviously have people that deal with esports promotions, whatever, that probably rarely even talk to that guy. But my problem is, it's not like you have to look hard for personalities right now. Like, one, we all agree, like, Cedric is good. Cedric, I don't know if he just wasn't available if they asked him, but why wasn't he on the panel? Right? Like, hell, I'll pat myself on the back and say, I'm available. I've been doing a lot of coverage. Hell, I probably have more coverage time in for sure in the last year than a good chunk of the people that they selected. And I'm not hard to find. And then we have people that we've showcased, right? Like John Roberts, JRR2. He's one of the up-and-coming brewers. He plays the ladder all the time. He knows all the cards. He even has a good group, a good crowd every time he gets on the stream. So he should be one of the type of people you absolutely want to do coverage. And he's not on the group. So it's not like you had to look hard to find people. There are personalities you could have gotten. So like that's the only part that really bugged me about. Because I looked at that and I'm like, oh man, that's such a good group. You know, you got all these people, you know, people that are even well-loved in the Magic community. I mean, like they chose well for the people they chose. But then I looked and just said, well, okay, I see what's missing.
Yeah. Like you said, 23 shots at it. And I'll
give people slack. I know people say I want every single group to be as diverse as possible, but sometimes it's just not going to be, right? Like if you are doing a small event and there's only two spots or three slots, like sometimes it's going to be about either you already have an employee who's on your payroll or somebody you work with already that you know knows your system or whatever. And that all makes sense. But when you have 23 opportunities to get it right and you don't have one, bruh, come on. Like, just one. That's all I'm asking for. I could have been the token and been fine with it. Like, for real. I'm just being honest. Like,
Color of Magic calls for tokenism. I can see it now.
I mean, for real. But, I mean, you didn't even have that. Like, you literally didn't even have a token black person on there. Like, that feels like you just missed and you weren't even trying. And we're not asking for a lot. That's the thing. I'm not saying you had to go and get all of these different people. You know, I'm just saying you didn't even have one. You didn't have the courtesy slot. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm making a bigger deal out of it than I need to be or whatever. And I, you know, I'm
that's why we're here. You know, this is what we talk about.
Yeah, I'm willing to entertain that, you know. But the truth is, again, I think it only bothered me. Because I've seen other groups and went like, all right. Sucks you don't have a slightly more diverse group, but whatever. It's fine. But like I said, when you have 23 people, that feels inexcusable to me. That feels like you didn't even... Matter of fact, with 23 slots, I would have tried to not only have a black person on there, but I would have also been like, cool, let's make sure we have as many different, if we can, ethnicities represented from people who are available. And then, you know, maybe include somebody that's got a disability or something or whatever and get them involved. And just represent as much of our group and of our community as we can. Because there's no reason when you have that many slots. And I get it. You're trying to have some people from different countries and whatever because, you know, you've qualified people from all over the world. And so I get it. Like, there is a need for some of that, right? At least half to two-thirds of your group is just going to be somewhat pre-selected because you're looking for top personalities in each of those regions or whatever. But that doesn't say anything about the last 6 to 8 slots there. Like, and here's the thing. Coverage is probably still going to be good. And I'm still going to watch some of it. I mean, they have great people doing coverage. So this isn't, in no way am I trying to say, I am disparaging any of the people that are on their coverage team. Because at least now there's some I don't know. So I have no idea how good they're. There's probably five or six I wasn't familiar with. But the ones I did recognize, I have pretty good faith they're going to do a good job. So it's not even the overall quality, but it's like when, again, when we talk about when somebody tuning in and they look and say, oh, there's a bunch of people that aren't like me. Like that become, and even if people aren't consciously thinking it, it's a thing you see and a thing you recognize. So I don't know. It's just one of the things, like I said, at first it didn't bother me when I saw how large the group is and I didn't see the recognized names, even for, you know, just the black players and personalities in the Magic community. That kind of bugged me a bit. So I don't, and like I said, the list is good. Like I've worked with Reed. Reed is great. He's good for commentary. Martin Yuza, same thing. You know, Brian Gottlieb and Jerry Thompson, those two guys are great. And they are great supporters of a lot of positive things in the community. So like, no hate for any help. Pleasant Kenobi, he's had me on his YouTube show. You know, like no problems with any of these people. Same thing with like Alias V is fun. I've worked with her on a thing, right? Like I have no disparaging remarks about the actual people they chose. I'm just saying like, why weren't others chosen as well? But yeah, that's it. Anyway, that coverage is happening this weekend. Go watch it. I still say support the event and the coverage because we want more of these type of events to happen. I think this is a good big first step for getting some companies that aren't traditional paper tabletop Magic companies. Like these are outside companies that do other things that are supporting Magic at a competitive level and on a digital level, which I think is a big deal. If, you know, this is to continue to thrive, expand, you know, give bigger prizes that the average person can get access to, I think you need all of these type of efforts to keep moving forward. So feel free to celebrate it.
So Red Bull's doing a lot throughout gaming, you know, video gaming, board gaming, all of that. So definitely we wanted to keep them interested.
Yeah. And I'm like I said, I was conflicted because I like everything they're doing with this series. I really do. I like so many of stuff. They had different formats available. They ran stuff in different time zones, so more people had access to it. Like they did so many things right. And then this is like just the one glaring thing toward the end, you know, that kind of bugged me a bit. But one little thing we want to touch on as we kind of close the show here. Man, I read a story today from, what was the website? It was one of the big reporter sites, but they're running a story about a group called the Patriot Front. It might have been the Huffington Post, actually, I think is where I read this. But the Patriot Front is basically a group similar to the Proud Boys. Apparently, they were created out of, I guess, the previous group that was in charge of the Tiki Torch riots, whatever those were. I can't remember the name of that group. But you know what I'm talking about, where the guy got hit with the car and all that. I guess their leaders broke up or went to jail or whatever. So one of the other people in that group started this Patriot Front group. And they're already trying to like make plans post-Trump. And, you know, they don't at all want there to be equality. They, you know, basically every stereotype you would expect that group to have, they have. And this is all from the reporter, like finding stuff in their message groups, messages that were sent to them or whatever, you know, trying to get the story and I guess in some level infiltrate the group and all that and learn what's going on. And even they said, well, you know, we don't particularly care for Trump that much, but, you know, he is helping push our agendas and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, see, even they are just like the whole reason they're voting for Trump is because it's helping them get what they want.
Yeah.
Which is all a bunch of awful things. Some very awful things. Feel free to do a search for Patriot Front, Huffington Post. There are some things said in the article I am not going to repeat on the show. I will say that. But I bring this up to say, if you were wondering why you need to vote, it's to make sure people like this don't continue to have a voice. That people like this have a harder time promoting themselves. and trying to push these myths of superiority and inequality. You know, some of these people are saying, like, I saw somebody post the other day, well, we all know that immigrants can't properly assimilate to American culture. And then immediately that thread was filled up with people like, hey, I came here when I was 12 because of this thing, and I'm a doctor at this major hospital, right? I do this thing, and I'm an instructor at this college. I you know, a whole thing. But people feel emboldened to make those types of dumb statements right now because of the things we are allowing to be said, to be promoted, or whatever, in our highest offices. And it's not even just the president. Like, when we talk about voting, like, I'm talking all the way down to your damn school board. Mm-hmm. Like, your HOA, whatever. Like, I mean, vote every opportunity you have to vote, because all of those things affect people. All those things affect somebody. Like, you can't just worry about the president. Hell, we've seen all of the representatives and the senators or whatever that have said dumb things too.
You probably saw just this past week in Texas, where Texas had ruled that social workers could deny help to gay and disabled people. And that was just reversed because, of course, there's a huge outcry and media covered it. And, oh, wait, did we say that? Was that bad? Should we not have done that? And it was that pressure that made them, within a week, reverse course.
The thing to me is that shouldn't even, like you should have enough character that when that even comes across your desk, it should be an instant hell no.
You would like to think so.
Yeah, because, like, here's the thing. Like, I don't agree with a lot of conservatives right now, but I'm in no way going to agree with something that says, well, just because you're conservative, we're going to deny you human rights and health care. That's terrible. Like, so, yeah, get out and vote. And right now, if by the time you're listening to this, you're only going to have a couple days left to vote. Do not put your ballots in the mail, because there's all types of different stories we're seeing from different legislation that may or may not count the votes at this point. So go to a ballot box or go to a polling station. Yes, it might be a little inconvenient, but if you want to make sure your vote gets counted and you want to make sure you're heard and you want to show support for the right people and the right causes, go to a polling station, go to a ballot box. I have already got mine. We mailed mine in a couple weeks ago. I got my thing. I tracked it online. My vote's already been counted. So I already checked it and tracked it. I'm good. So mine are in. Hopefully everybody else goes and does their part. I have no idea if we're going to change your mind, but hopefully we at least get you to get off your butt. Go vote if you haven't, or get people around you, your friends, your cousins, your parents, whoever, who haven't voted, get them to get up and go, because it's one of the things that we absolutely get to do in a democracy and in a free country. Let's try to keep it that way. Brian, where can people find you on social media?
I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. Our family channel on YouTube is Alan's Ever After.
And you can find me just about everywhere at Power Dragon, PowerDragn, streaming three nights a week on Twitch and just about every day on YouTube. Or you can just follow me on the Twitter if you just want a fun follow. But as usual, we're going to say, wherever you are listening, whenever you are listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And please, even if you find it annoying and you don't care about it, whatever, do a favor for the rest of us. Wear your mask, wash your hands, stay away from other humans, and let's get back to gaming and gathering the way we want to. If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us on our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate, under patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at colorofmtg. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.